Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, your stories of getting or not getting sleep when you have a baby in the house. Your stories of comparing salaries with your coworkers. President Obama wants that to be protected behavior under the law. Republicans in Congress don't and are expected to vote it down today. Also, when Bette Midler was here last week, one of the things we discussed was her letter opposing an LG office building that would rise above the Palisades Cliffs, the first building ever to breach the tree line.
The Rockefeller family deeded the Cloisters Museum and Fort Tryon Park, and bought the Palisades across from the Cloisters so that the view would be unspoiled.
Today we'll talk to an LG vice president and to former Governor Christy Whitman, who's on Bette Midler's side. But we begin with New Yorker magazine Washington editor Ryan Lizza. His article in this week's issue basically declares Chris Christie toast in the presidential campaign. Hi, Ryan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So your article begins
with... I would quibble with the toast thing, though. We can get into that.
Go ahead. Quibble.
Well, I mean, I don't think he's, you know, I think that the GOP field in 2016 is pretty weak, and everyone's got their issues. So, you know, there's no reason he can't get in there and fight it out. You know what I mean? I think his plan was to enter that race the dominant figure. That is obviously no longer the case, and that's not going to happen. But despite all the challenges and all the issues that he has, I think given that there's no one else in the field that is going to run away with it, I guess I would say it's not. There's no reason for him to completely pack it in.
Oh well,
that was my quibble.
I thought you were characterizing it as toast, and I was going to quibble along the same lines. And even
Joy Behar in the piece calls him toast.
Yes, right. And we're going to play that clip. But even to say he's being embraced by right wing talk radio now and people like that because he's got new cred as a victim of the media,
yes,
a victim of the liberal media and the Democratic Party establishment. So a lot of people who on the right who saw Chris Christie as, you know, too liberal for Iowa before are suddenly like, hey, Chris Christie, they're jumping on our guy. It's unfair.
Yes, that is definitely happening. If you look at the polls, his support among Democrats and independents has dropped, but it's partially been made up increased support among the most conservative voters. I don't know if that's a lasting effect, to be honest, because he governed New Jersey. He had to work with Democrats to get his agenda passed. He doesn't have the kind of true conservative record that some of his opponents have. So. And that was always going to be a problem for him, right? His problem was always going to be ideological in the Republican primaries. The way he was going to compensate for that was to say, hey, we've lost the White House two times in a row here. We're on the cusp of losing the third time. You need to have someone who is electable. So that electability argument was going to be his calling card.
Right.
So, and obviously that's taken a big hit.
The moderate won the Republican primaries the last two times, John McCain and Mitt Romney, you know.
Yeah.
So that argument, somebody could shoot that full of holes, too. But I don't want to get
that's true.
Too sidetracked down that rabbit hole. I want to tell everybody that your article begins with this roast of 90-year-old former Governor Brendan Byrne that Christie attended on April Fool's Day in Newark. And I couldn't believe what I was reading. So we went and we actually found audio of what you describe as the most awkward moment in this roast, and we're going to play it in a minute. And I want to set it up by reading a little because the audio is not great. But Christie subjected himself at this thing to liberal comedian Joy Behar and a parade of other wiseacres taking the stage and mocking him over the George Washington Bridge scandal and his weight and going to kiss the ring of right-wing financier Sheldon Adelson in Vegas the other week. Some
yep.
of the lines you printed from various comics, you knew who's asked to kiss. Whatever you say, Sheldon, whatever you say. And someone else, it really is an honor to be standing standing next to what could be the next president of the... He shuffled some papers on the lectern. I'm sorry, these are the wrong notes. I'm doing a roast next week with Jeb Bush. Ha, ha, ha. And then the Joy Behar moment. This is what you'll hear on the tape, but this is going to help you hear it. When I first heard that he was accused of blocking off three lanes of the bridge, I said, what the hell is he doing standing in the middle of the bridge? And after another barb, Christie interrupted her, this is a burn roast. He stood up and tried to grab her notes. The audience laughed awkwardly. Behar said, stop bullying me. And it goes on from there. So here is about a minute of Joy Behar at this roast, supposedly of Brendan Byrne, in Newark on April 1st, and Christie's response.
Let me take a moment to thank Governor Christie for hoping this event. It was very brave of him. I mean, he's had a few tough weeks. Don't look at me like that. You're scaring me. First the Velveeta shortage, and now the bridge thing. I mean, it's bad. And, but, you know, when I first heard that he was accused of blocking off three lanes on the bridge, I said, what the hell is he doing, standing in the middle of the bridge? The White House, it used to be the House of Pancakes, so you're fucked up. And I don't know, I mean,
That's where he said, this is a burn roast, and she said, don't bully me. Oh, my. Why don't you get up here at the microphone instead of being such a coward, Joy Behar said, if folks you couldn't make it out.
He did get up right after that.
How about that? Let me put it to you this way, in a way that you'd appreciate. Your toast. That got pretty rough.
Yeah, this was, and I was very careful in how I wrote about this, because it was one of those events where you're watching it, and it's sort of teetering between being all in good fun and being incredibly awkward and tense.
Yeah.
And I talked to Behar afterwards to sort of get her impression, and she was rattled by the whole thing. I talked to her and her husband, and her husband, who obviously watches her do these things all the time, said he'd never seen anything like that, and he told me he lost it. And, you know, she was going on about how she thought it was inappropriate and that he was, you know, he had interrupted her act. So, it was, you know,
But here's my question for you. A roast is just a roast. So did you publish that story to make a point that if he was still such a formidable presidential candidate, the court jesters wouldn't have dared to be that pointed?
I think that's one thing. What I was trying to set up there is this roast came at a point where he's trying to put everything behind him. He put out this report. He hired some lawyers to write a report. The report came out a couple of weeks ago. It said, oh, he didn't know anything about these lane closures. And their political strategy was to put this whole thing behind them, then go out to Vegas, do his presidential politics thing, kiss the ring of Adelson. And then that kind of didn't go so great because he ended up apologizing to Adelson because he stepped in. He said something that Adelson didn't like.
He said that he referred to the West Bank as the occupied territories.
Right.
Which is not actually what
everyone refers to the map.
Yeah, not a controversial statement in most circles. But
no, George W. Bush used to use that term. That's what the State Department refers to them as. That's what the UN refers to them as. But among a very, very right-wing pro-Israel crowd that Adelson represents, that's not the politically correct term, and Christie ended up having to apologize for that. Right? This is Chris Christie, the big tough guy. He ends up having to apologize for something he believes.
Which is not to say that Israel doesn't have arguments for its position in the Middle East conflict, but by and large, everybody refers to it except a certain conservative the occupied territories.
Yeah, I think Adelson and the Republican Jewish Coalition, which was the crowd he was addressing, their preferred term is disputed territories.
Right.
We don't need to get into all that. So the point of that lead was, all right, things aren't going so well for Chris Christie in the turnaround strategy here. And now instead of, you know, focusing on presidential politics and doing his national campaign, where is he? He's at this low-budget roast in Newark, New Jersey, on stage with a bunch of local, you know, largely liberal comedians who are just tearing into him. And he finally, the way I read that is he finally just said, I'm not going to sit here and take this. Usually the script at those things is that if you're a politician, you just sit there and you let the comedians do their thing no matter how bad it gets. I mean, remember when Bill Clinton used to have to go to those political events in Washington where the comedians would get up and make jokes about Monica Lewinsky?
Did they really? I don't remember.
Yeah, in the 90s. I mean, that's the, you know, there are always these political events that where comedians are ripping into the politicians. I've never seen a politician react the way he did.
Much of your article, and we can take calls for Ryan Lizza, Washington correspondent for The New Yorker, on the roast, Christie's prospects, and we'll touch on a couple of other national politics stories like the 2014 midterm elections and maybe the equal pay thing happening in Congress today. Should workers be protected by law in their right to discuss their salaries with their coworkers, compare salaries? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post or tweet at Brian Lehrer for Ryan Lizza this morning. Much of your article is a history of Chris Christie, bully prosecutor, dare I say, including political bullying of people who turned out to be innocent through the federal judicial system as U.S. attorney. Tell me the Joe Doria story.
Well, when Chris Christie was the U.S. attorney from 2002 to 2008, he focused on public corruption, right? And his biggest sting operation involved basically a con man named Solomon Dweck, who, I mean, the way I describe it is basically the U.S. attorney in New Jersey. That office unleashed Dweck on Hudson County, and basically Dweck set up meetings with any politician he could and offered them envelopes full of cash to fast-track construction projects. So it was a straight-up bribery sting that Christie was his most famous sting operation. And at a certain point, and this is all very well documented at the time and also in a great book called The Jersey Sting, and they frankly, the prosecutors, they wanted the Corzine administration, and they wanted this cabinet member in the Corzine administration named Joe Doria, who they were convinced was corrupt. Frankly, I should add, there's never been any evidence that has come out that Joe Doria did anything wrong. And Dweck tried to bribe Doria unsuccessfully. In fact, Doria once just left a meeting at a diner where Dweck was trying to set him up in a sting. And at the end of 2008, Christie resigns as U.S. attorney, and he runs for governor. In July of 2009, in the middle of that campaign, his former colleagues, the prosecutors in the U.S. attorney's office, pulled the trigger on the sting operation and arrest 44 people on the same day. And the campaign against Corzine, Chris Christie against John Corzine, those arrests instantly became the top issue in the campaign.
So you're saying legitimate arrests by and large, but
political. Yeah, legitimate arrests. These are politicians that took envelopes of cash.
But politically timed.
This is the great question. I mean, the prosecutors in that office knew that Barack Obama had recently been elected president and a new U.S. attorney would be coming in soon. They didn't wait for that new U.S. attorney to come in and see if he wanted to keep do the case. They didn't wait for the election to be over to pull the trigger on these arrests. They did it in the middle of a campaign, and there's no doubt that doing it helped Chris Christie. One of the people they went after that day was Joe Doria. They didn't arrest him, but they raided his house, and the media watched as the FBI agents brought boxes out of his house. Well, a lot of the boxes were empty because there was no evidence in the house. And that immediately forced Corzine to fire Joe Doria, a top cabinet member. And, of course, that poor guy, his reputation was damaged. It took him several years to finally get a letter from the U.S. attorney saying that he did absolutely nothing wrong. So this, you know, there have been these allegations.
One more. How about the Senator Robert Menendez story?
Well, and this predates that. So this is 2006. Menendez is running against Tom Kaine Jr. Tom Kaine Jr. is the son of Christie's mentor, Tom Kaine Sr., the former two-term governor of New Jersey. They've more recently had a falling out, but back in 2006, he was very close with the Kaines. And
Chris Christie subpoenaed Bob, a nonprofit that had ties to Bob Menendez, and the fact that he subpoenaed it was that nonprofit was leaked to the press, and it caused a huge story in the middle of the Menendez-Cain campaign. Menendez, I mean, to this day, hates Chris Christie for this. And Menendez went on to win the campaign, and it took him several years to get a letter from the U.S. attorney saying that the incident was over, there was no wrongdoing. So there was this series of the U.S. attorney going after Democrats in New Jersey at the same time that Chris Christie was very clearly, and this was public knowledge, pursuing the governor's office.
And by the way, listeners, if you want to see that Joy Behar, Chris Christie video, we've now added a link on our website, so you can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show and feel awkward yourself as an audience member watching that moment. Menendez has other scandal clouds over him, independent of Christie, we should point out.
Yeah, totally separate.
But I was aware at the time of the story that you told, and remember the U.S. attorney scandal, where some of them got fired under President Bush for refusing to mount political investigations of Democratic politicians during election season that year? Well, Christie was one who did against Menendez.
This is very important. I didn't get into this in my piece, but it's very interesting because Christie was – the chronology here is a little cloudy, but – Christie at various times was on the list and off the list of U.S. attorneys that the White House wanted to fire.
Huh.
Some people have speculated, and this is a very murky part of the story, and I looked at this carefully and couldn't figure out the, you know, one way or the other, but some people have alleged that or questioned, oh, hey, did Chris Christie learn that he was on the bad list at the White House? And to get on the good list, did he start doing more high-profile anti-democratic investigations? That allegation has been thrown at Christie for years. He has always said that's not true, and he has always said that if you look at the timing of when he was on the bad list, it doesn't match up with the timing of his most high-profile investigations.
Huh.
But these look,
Menendez
these,
eventually cleared, we should say, of the thing that he was being investigated by Christie for at the time that Menendez was running for office.
Absolutely,
and
right.
that's an interesting detail that you just shared, which I had actually never heard before. I had only
the list
of whether Christie was on the list or off the list of those who would be fired. I was only ever aware of the coincidence or not of the timing.
Yes, he was. So this is an important part of it. He was absolutely on the list of both those that would be fired, and he became aware that he was on that list, and he actually. If you read the Chris Christie biography by Bob Ingle, I-N-G-L-E, it's documented in there. In fact, he was very angry about being on that list, and he tried to get to the bottom of it. He called people at the Justice Department to figure out what was going on. So having learned that, some people have said, well, wait a second, did he try and get off the list by going after this Democrat or that Democrat? But one thing, if you look at that history of how he used his U.S. Attorney's office, It convinced me that there's got to be some rule or cooling off period for U.S. attorneys who want to run statewide for governor or want to run for elective office, because the temptations of that power are just too much. He left at the end of 2008, in the middle of this major sting operation against some of the most important Democrats in the most Democratic county in the state, and then immediately ran for governor. Whether he did anything wrong or not, it just raises conflict of interest questions. And after that happened, a lot of legislators in New Jersey tried to push forward a law that said you can't run the U.S. a U.S. attorney can't run for office until 2 years after they leave.
That's fascinating, that idea of a cooling off period from that office. I mean, if Christie built his reputation as a corruption fighter in corruption soaked New Jersey, even if he got a few wrong, or we could say push the envelope in a few cases, allegedly.
Yeah, pun intended.
Right. Maybe that was actually a public service for the state, not just a bully's way to rise to power, or maybe some of each.
And that's what he—that's exactly what he has said over the years is, that he had a perfect record as prosecutor, and, the cases were clear. These are people who took cash and promised to do favors. And that all the rest is just whining by Democrats who are defending local corrupt politicians.
I will say that the incoming, this is something I didn't mention in the piece, but the his successor.
Ooh, we're getting all this exclusive content.
Yeah,
didn't
exactly.
make it
this
to the piece.
You're getting the weedy stuff. But Fishman, the U.S. attorney that came after Christie, and the U.S. attorney that right now is the biggest threat to Christie's future because he's investigating Bridgegate, he made a comment publicly back after these arrests that was very critical of the sting operation that Christie and his colleagues in the U.S. Attorney's Office pulled off. And he basically said that his comment was something like there was nothing that tied all of the cases together. In other words, you just had this guy, Solomon Dweck, who, by the way, later was found to be have a long history of mental disorders. You just had this one guy, Dweck, going in and pushing envelopes of cash on local, you know, frankly, low-income politicians, and that there was no larger scheme at play. And that comment was interpreted as Fishman basically saying he didn't really think much of this investigation.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Ryan Lizza, Washington correspondent for The New Yorker, for a few more minutes. His article this week, Crossing Christie, What the Bridge Scandal Says About the Governor's Political Style and His Future. 212-433-WNYC. Kylie in Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hey, Kylie.
Hi, how are you all doing?
Good, thank you.
Okay, so this is probably stating the obvious, right? Chris Christie clearly knows all the rules of government. I mean, he went after all these people. I wonder if your guests could speculate, how would Chris Christie, as U.S. attorney, respond to Bridgegate and all of this stuff if he were looking at Sharp James doing it or Wayne Bryant doing it or Joe Doria doing it? Like,
Kylie, that is a great, great question.
You sly devil, Kylie.
No, it really is a great question because, and I'm not the first person to say this, but if Chris Christie is a very lucky man that Chris Christie is not the U.S. attorney right now, or someone like Chris Christie is not the U.S. attorney right now. Paul Fishman is a very by-the-book, low-profile U.S. attorney. Nobody believes he has any political ambitions. He has not made public corruption his top issue. And I think most people who have looked at this closely would agree that if a prosecutor like Chris Christie were in there, he would be doing everything he could to take down the governor in the wake of this Bridgegate scandal. If it were Corzine, if the shoe were on the other foot and this was Christie going after Corzine, Corzine would be in a lot of trouble. Remember, before Corzine, there was McGreevy, and Christie, as U.S. attorney, investigated McGreevy. He actually had a confidential informant record a conversation with Governor McGreevy, and that investigation was chugging along when McGreevy resigned over a separate scandal when he told everyone that he was gay and he had a lover who was threatening to out him. At the same time that scandal was going on, Christie's investigation of McGreevy was going on, and a lot of people think that had more to do with his resignation than the other one. So that's a long way of answering Kylie's question, that I think Christie is very lucky that he doesn't have a U.S. attorney who acts the way that he did in there.
By the way, we have a U.S. attorney as our lead guest tomorrow, Preet Bharara. He may cancel after hearing this segment. I don't know. but we're going to run out of time, so we'll do some other Washington politics on another day. But there is no evidence so far that Christie knew about the bridge plot in advance or had any idea that the lane closures were political when he was told on September 11th when they were still going on. You don't believe all a lie, do you?
What we know, the one piece of information that has come out recently, and to their credit, it was self-reported by the Christie folks, although they dismissed it. David Wildstein, who I think everyone agrees seems to be the driving force behind this thing,
from the Port Authority, Christie's
appointee. From the Port Authority, and coincidentally, Christie's who went to high school with Christie, he has apparently alleged that he told Christie something about this at an event on 9/11. Now, we don't know this from Wildstein. We know this, second and third hand from Christie aides who Wildstein told about this. Christie has said he does not remember Wildstein telling him about this, and we really don't know exactly what Wildstein alleges that he told Christie about. So
So that of course, if you're Fishman, the U.S. attorney, you're trying to get to the bottom of that. Did Wildstein say, "Hey, boss, I'm paying back that SOB who didn't endorse you by shutting down lanes in Fort Lee," right? If he said that, that's a big deal. If he said, "Oh, we're studying the some traffic patterns at the bridge. You know, if you read about it, that's what it is." Well, that doesn't really implicate Christie. But that of course is the closest that Christie has been tied to contemporaneous knowledge of the closures.
Before you go, you mentioned two books: Bob Ingalls, Chris Christie, The Inside Story of His Rise to Power.
Yes, that's
and
it.
The Jersey Sting by Ted Sherman. Anything else for our Bridgegate Fanatics reading list?
Yes, there's a new book out by a guy named Lou Manzo who was caught up in one of the Christie stings. He's a Democrat. He's not a fan of Chris Christie, but he's written a very interesting book that gets deep into the issues of how Chris Christie used the office of U.S. Attorney. And I mention it briefly in the piece, but if your readers are interested in this subject, Manzo has a sort of PhD on this at this point, and his book is very interesting.
Called Set the Record Straight? Is that the same thing?
I think it's called Naked Ambition.
Okay. By Manzo.
Well, Naked Ambition. I think it's called, the subtitle is The Rise and Fall of Chris Christie.
And again, listeners, we posted that video of Joy Behar roasting Chris Christie at a Brendan Byrne event in Newark on April 1st, and Christie getting up out of the audience and all of that, which is...
Or he was on the dais. He was standing right next to the podium, so it wasn't
right.
as dramatic as getting up out of the audience.
Okay, great. But as
that would have been something.
Yeah, even more of a something. As described by Ryan Lizza at the beginning of his article in this week's New Yorker, Crossing Christie, What the Bridge Scandal Says About the Governor's Political Style and His Future. See that video at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Ryan, thanks a lot. Good talk.
Hey, good talking to you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will stay on the prosecutor beat, but in a very different vein. Why prosecutors are required to share evidence with the defense, and why prosecutors in New York often don't. Stay tuned.